Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome to the show. In case you don't know, this is a faith and values program that tries to intersect faith and value with different people, different experiences, different things going on in the world. It's been a pleasure doing the show now for almost 20 years. I've enjoyed every second of it. Thank you, Perry's Fine Jewelry and Ruth Chris Steakhouse, for your sponsorship of the show. Without it, we could not do this on a weekly basis. Well, we've kind of had an emphasis this fall with different pro athletes who've come into the studio and shared their lives, their faith and values perspective. We've had golfers, we've had basketball players, and we've had many NFL players present and past. Today is one of those past great NFL players. It's my pleasure to have on the show Joe Jacoby, one of the famed Washington Redskins hogs back in the 1980s, 90s, and what an experience he had with that great team, Super Bowls, I don't know, three, four. Joe, thanks for being on the show today.
David, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's one of the fun things to see you walk in the studio because one of the few people I can look eye to eye with. How big are you?
I'm 6'8", still my playing weight that I played at. I'm about 315.
315. Yeah. Good. No wonder you were one of the hogs, as I guess they affectionately called you.
The hogs were basically on the shorter guys, the Grimm and the Bostic. They were around 6'2", 6'4", and they weighed the same as much as me, but I had mine spread out over 6'8".
So they couldn't convince you to play basketball? I mean, at that height, you could have dominated inside. I wouldn't
I
want to post you up.
I did play basketball in high school.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I did. I did. I had offers coming out of high school in Division II. Basketball was really my first love.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, after seeing how big you are, I can understand it.
But I guess going back, and the good Lord led me in the right direction and the path, and I chose wisely and ended up where I ended up.
Yeah, but you obviously had a notable NFL career. But what's interesting is, you came out of college and you weren't drafted. So let's talk about pre-college, if you will. Where were you raised, your family, your background, all of that?
Raised in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm one of four kids. I'm number two in line. I got an older brother who's roughly 2 years older than me, a sister who's 2 years younger than me, and we had a fourth, our brother, but he passed away when he was about 14 years old.
Oh, really?
So there was four of us. Just a typical family growing up back then. Father was a factory worker making Hobart's washing machines and putting the parts in for that. And then my mom ended up going back to work because my father ended up had to go on disability because of the many heart attacks and stuff he had back then and couldn't work anymore. So she was in these little department stores and stuff like that. So the whole family kind of helped out, took odd jobs. I remember in high school that I worked in the cafeteria. And then after all that, classes and stuff, still went out either football or basketball practice. And then I had a job at a little department store, same thing, what they called back then a stock boy. So we all pitched in with the family and make sure everything was putting their 2 cents in, everybody was doing their share.
So really a middle class, working class American family, as we would know it to be back in the 1970s, 80s time period.
Right, back in that time frame. Father passed away when I was a freshman in high school. So I didn't know much about my father growing up. I was just turned 15. He passed. I was turned 15, and I'm a July baby. He died that August, after a month after my birthday. So I'm freshman in high school, starting freshman football and going up to the high school level. And a lot of burden now on my mom, and with the father gone and taking over, my big brother trying to step in and stuff like that. So some difficult times as far as growing up in that time period and all that, but end up getting through 4 years of high school. Had several different offers, not really a lot, but about two.
I had two. At least two, you can
I
say
had
a
two.
Lot.
But, I mean, this is after 30-plus years. I go back now, and I have dinner and stuff with my former high school coach, head coach. And I'm hearing things that my mother did when my father passed away. and meeting with him and telling him, they'd better take care of my son. I'm leaving him in your hands.
Wow.
I knew nothing about any of that. Mm. So, I mean, 35 years after the fact, you're hearing stuff like that.
You know, Joe, we need to go to break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about this, because one of my great beliefs is that your sports coach for your kids needs to reflect your values. Mm-hmm. And I know I look back on my high school coach, my college coach, and I know how much they meant to me. And it sounds like you're saying the same thing. So when we come back, I'd love for you to talk about how that high school coach stepped into your dad's void and helped mold you and make you into the man that you are today. But also, you know, just how you began to overcome the loss of a father for your years in college and then in the NFL. Joe Jacoby's my guest. We're going to have a great interview, folks. Hang with me. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. My guest today, former NFL great Joe Jacoby, one of the Washington Redskins' famed hogs, an upfront offensive lineman who helped clear the way for John Riggins' great touchdown run in one of the Super Bowls. Joe, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for your time.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the time to be on and talk about my life and what that has meant and hopefully means to somebody else.
Yeah, thank you again. Well, we want to talk about where you went from the tragedy of losing your dad when you just turned 15. And you were talking about how you go back and talk with your high school coach and learn some things your mom has said to him. And she had said, you know, make sure you take care of my son. Step right into that void that's now there because of the father's death. Let's talk about the importance of a high school or even a middle school college coach for young kids growing up. Even if they have a dad, there's just something extraordinarily important about them.
There is something important about that. I do quite a few different camps. I've been involved in a lot of camps, and I coached and after I got out of the business world, but back into coaching football, Division III level, high school level, and just seeing what these kids and what they're striving to do. And then you get somebody who's in my position and been there and try to help them see that it's not everything. I said, your life is more than playing the game. And we talk. And to me, it's more the off-the-field issues than on-the-field issues. A lot of these young kids, even though they have fathers, and the fathers that are there are doing great jobs, but it's those outside influences that really changed, and that changed me with the high school coach. I mean, he was a tough, back in that time in the 60s and 70s, they were tough disciplinarians.
Get in your face.
And he was a shorter individual, and when he would be yelling at me, he'd be grabbing my face mask and be hanging there with his feet dangling in the air. you know, and my offensive line coach carried a 2x4 around. 3-foot 2x4. So when we lined up, he wanted 3-foot splits, which you're 3 feet from the next guy next to you. And then he would put it down, and if it hit your foot, there was disciplinary with that 2x4. So those are the things. But as I went through, and in my life, I had scholarships offered to Louisville, stayed at home, and I also signed to go to play at Vanderbilt. Back then they had the letter of intent for each conference. I signed one to go at Vanderbilt. I fell in love with the school academically and all that. And who doesn't fall in love with Nashville?
A wonderful city.
But yeah. So in that time there was that Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh yeah.
You know Burt Reynolds. Who the famous alumnus from there? Jerry Reed.
Oh really?
Yeah. So okay. Jerry Reed's had all these recruiting outings and bringing in all the football recruits, and so that sold me, you know, seeing that. And but I couldn't leave my mom and my family because one father had passed away. And then I ended up staying at Louisville. And then my life, about 7 years from age 15 to age 22, there was a lot of things that happened. A lot of freshman year in college, I come home after finishing my first camp, get ready to go to church, get up. My 14-year-old brother, I told you about, he died in his sleep that night. Mm.
So can't imagine what that would be like for you and your family.
Well, my mother, and I'm, you know, being a parent now, losing a child, I don't know how she handled that. And but just lost her husband, you know, 3 or 4 years before that. Now this.
Does he know what he died of, Joe, just real
quickly? Well, it goes back to what my father, you know, the heart disease. All I remember it is that he was born blue baby, what they called it, which means there were some issues going on with his heart at that time. And back then, this is 1963 he was born. So there was not a lot of technology and the advancement of the medicine world at that time. So now, you know, going back and looking at all that, this, things could have probably been different if he was born in this time and survived all of that. So I end up going, finished college, had a mediocre. Louisville wasn't a big powerhouse in football. So, but it was a good 4 years.
Did you have great success at Louisville individually?
It's kind of hard to measure for an offensive lineman unless you have, you know, the quarterback that has thrown for a lot of yards or a running back that's, you know, 1,500, 2,000 yards rushing in the season. We were very average. We first year we were 7-4. Then my next 3 years, identical records every year, 5-6. But we end up, I end up moving on from that. Didn't have any opportunities. Back then, I didn't even want to, didn't even think about the NFL. I didn't want to play in the NFL.
What convinced you to try? I mean, you go undrafted.
I went undrafted. It was the offensive line coach from Washington Redskins. That was first year Coach Gibbs came in. His name was Joe Bugle. He came down in January before the draft and talked to me and stuff. Said, if you want to play in the National Football League, this is what you need to do. He told me, and somebody telling me to put on weight back then. That was, being that tall, I was, back then as senior in college, I was only 270.
Only 270.
Only 270. But in the NFL, they want to bulk you up. He goes, if you get up to 295, increase your – I wasn't big in working out. I wasn't a weightlifter. I didn't like it. So I had to dedicate it and devote it. I was going to give it a shot and do it for the next 3 months. He came back in April, worked me out for 2.5 hours on the field, up and down and doing all these drills. And they said they were interested. They might draft me later, 11th or 12th round. Back then they had 12 rounds in the draft, not 7 like they do now. And that's the only team that really showed an interest in me. So when the draft comes, the draft is over with. We go through 2 days. I have been drafted. The phone's ringing off the hook because back then there's no roster limit. So they bring 120, 125 guys to camp. The extra guys they bring to camp is really your bag holders. They're your blocking dummies. So I have phone calls sitting in my house with my mom. There was Dallas, Tampa Bay, Cincinnati. And then a scout from Seattle is at the front door. So we let him in. He's got a 3-year contract. He's telling me all the wonderful things about living out on the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. I'm still waiting for Washington to call. So they finally call after being talking with this gentleman for about 20 minutes. They had a plane ticket for me there at the airport in Louisville. And then I get back off that. I go pack, come back out. I told him that I have to look at the offer. I got a trip. I'm going up to Washington, D.C. I'm flying out now, heading to the airport. And what a nice scout. He drove me to the airport. The scout from Seattle drove me to the airport.
Wow.
So
he knew you were flying to Washington to talk
right,
with the Redskins.
He knew all that.
That is a nice guy.
So I get up to Washington. Coach Gibbs, first year. The first time he's hard, 1981, I guess. And back then, like I said, there's so many guys. There was about 40, 50 guys running around Redskin Park, them signing and all that. So I'm waiting my turn to go in to talk to Coach Gibbs. So I guess in between that, Joe was misinformed about me when I go in to meet with him. Just like you and I are sitting across and talking, same thing with him. So he was misinformed that I was a defensive lineman. I never played defense. So he went through all that and how I would fit into the Redskins and the plans, playing alongside Dave Butts and what defense he was going to run. And I never corrected him. I go out, assistant general manager office, assign a 2-year contract. I get a sign and most check, and I fly home that afternoon.
And they think you're a defensive
lineman. Coach Gibbs thinks I'm a defensive lineman. Now, Joe Bugle plays into this because he was told a certain number of guys to bring to camp. I can't remember the number, 14, 15 guys. I was the extra guy. I was the plus one. Later that day, Joe found out. So now he's all over Coach Bugle. Why are you doing? This kid's not going to get an opportunity. I'd just be holding the bag. Joe wanted to release me before I even went to camp.
No kidding.
No kidding. So that's that. Then I get to camp. This is not real smart, David. I end up signing with them. That year in the draft, they drafted 5 linemen.
Oh, my.
So God had a plan for me and where he wanted me. And so I get to camp. Number one draft choice is a lineman. He holds out 10 days. Now I get my opportunity because he's not there. So they see what I can do. So the day he signs, I get called out of a meeting. And I knew he signed. I know the routine. I figured they're going to let me go, give me opportunity to catch on with another team somewhere. No, Coach Gibbs had informed me my mother passed away, my rookie.
My goodness.
So in that time frame from my freshman year in high school to then, losing 3 members of your family, I'm not a real good Christian at this time. I'm mad at God. I was raised Catholic. I never understood that. I went to Catholic school. I went to Mass every morning because of school. And everything's in Latin. And how's that for a kid in the first grade, a 6-year-old, understand that?
My guest today is Joe Jacoby. Wow, what a life until now, Joe. And so you're in the NFL training camp with the Washington Redskins. You're getting ready to move forward with your life. And we want to pick up when we come back, you know, what happened, what allowed you to play like you played, and the success that you had, which is astronomical for so many of us who are NFL fans and look at your life and remember you so well from your days of success. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. My guest, Joe Jacoby, one of the Redskins' all-time greats, one of the Hogs from the 1980s, will be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Welcome back to the show. If you'd like to hear this show in its entirety, my interview with Joe Jacoby, one of the NFL great offensive linemen, a former Washington Redskin Hog, go to WBT.com, scroll down to the weekend shows, The David Chadwick Show, and you can download the program in its entirety and hear the podcast from beginning to end. Joe, again, thank you for your time today. When we left, you were talking about your first training camp with the Redskins, the offensive lineman who'd been drafted before you. Right. You weren't drafted at all, but he was drafted in the first round. Did a 10-day wait on his contract trying to figure things out. That gave you your opportunity. You stepped in, found out your mom had died. 3 close people in your life, your dad, your 14-year-old brother, your mom all passed away. How did that help you continue to move forward, though? Did you use football as kind of a crutch to help you deal with life? Talk to us about that.
I think so. I mean, that we go back with that old cliche, that football, you're going to get knocked down. That's how fast you get back up and get back up into life. And that played in my life as I was going through it. At the time, you don't think about any of that. You're surviving. And it's one day at a time. And my faith with being challenged, I mean, I would say my faith wasn't very strong back then. And I was, like I said at the other part, I was a very angry, upset young man. I didn't say I didn't like God. I wasn't real happy with God at this point. I was doing my own thing.
And you were raised in a Catholic atmosphere,
right?
You thought God was a punisher.
My parents and stuff, my mother, watching her, every night as a family, we would say the rosary. So it's not like I didn't have that, but I didn't have the aspect of the faith part that I am in my later years now, understanding and thinking, wow. I mean, I look back and I'm like, what did I miss? I mean, but I think God had a plan in my life and where we're going and all this.
There's always a plan.
There is always a plan, and I tell my wife that. Hear you say some of the things earlier today in the readings, and you know, I tell her the same thing with about the listening. I did use the same thing with the, you know, there's one mouth and two ears and all that. I said, God must have had a plan there.
Yeah, and he's trying to get us to listen to him in a lot of ways too. Well, let me jump back into your pro football career and get back into your faith life, because I think that's what people would love to hear today. You eventually become one of the NFL's great offensive linemen, and you played with the Redskins on, was it four Super Bowl teams?
Four Super Bowls. And, won three out of the four.
Yeah, and they were considered one of the great stretches of NFL teams in all of history. They're a great team. So what was that like?
I mean, interesting, my younger daughter and I, she goes, Dad, you need to write a book. So she and I are working on it. I record stuff. I send it to her. She lives up still in Northern Virginia. And this is something that she and I are doing, and I'm enjoying that with my daughter.
And you have how many children?
Just two.
Two daughters.
Girls.
Okay.
So I've been going through all that, and I look back on it, and she started the thing with, after the first Super Bowl, 17, we played out in Los Angeles. Here's a 23-year-old kid. I am riding in a helicopter at 3 o'clock in the morning over Los Angeles, being taken to one of those networks, you know, CBS or NBC, to do the 7 o'clock intro coming in. And I'm going, this is from a kid that wasn't drafted, was almost cut, and now I'm a Super Bowl winner. And God's hand was in all this. I look back at all that. God's hand was in this. I go to a team, and it had to be God's hand, because I didn't do my research and study. I drafted five offensive linemen. I signed as a free agent as one.
The odds are a little bit against you
at
that point.
Yeah, typically you would not do a situation like, unless God's involved in the plan. And, you know, at that time I didn't know that. But as I look back on it, I see God's hand in all this stuff in my life. And I guess going back and reflecting on those things that have happened to me.
And you see now God's hand working in all of that, but yet your faith hadn't developed like it is today. How did your faith grow to where it is today?
Well, there was another incident that happened. Now I'm married. He's blessed me. It'll be 35 years in March that my wife and I have been married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's God's grace.
Well, in today's world, it is a wonderful accomplishment.
Because I wasn't the best husband when we first got married. It was still about me and doing my thing. And our oldest daughter, who lives down here now too, my wife was pregnant with our second one. And said, you know, we need to start going to church. Well, I'm down in Louisville, Kentucky at the Kentucky Derby. And I get woken up that morning from a nurse at the hospital and said, everything's all right. She's going to make it through. What had happened, our daughter at that time was 18-month-old, our oldest. And we had a dog that was an Akita. And it was sick, had dysplasia in the hips and all that. So when she reached down to pet it, the dog attacked her and pinned her to the ground. And after surgery and everything, she had over 200 stitches in her face and everything. We almost lost her. I couldn't get out because it's Sunday after the Derby. I got back, and when I got back, she's coming out, and she said, I met a man, and he sent me back. So this is from an 18-month-old. Now
She's 18 months old, and she says, I saw a man, and he sent me back.
Right.
And of course, that has to be Jesus.
Well, it has to be Jesus. And now, she knew something, not from her parents, but my mother-in-law was a very devout Christian. So some of that influence came from her. But still, 18-month-old to come say something like that. And
Joe, that's remarkable.
It is remarkable.
18-month-old is
and
not
then
all
it
that
hit
articulate.
Me. I said, all right, God's been after me. He's been chasing me, and I've been avoiding him. And since that day, she just turned 31. So it's been the last, 29, 30 years. My walk has been developing.
Well, I guess that would wake somebody up when your 18-month-old says, I'm almost dead, and I saw a man, he said, I'm sending you back.
Right.
And does she remember any of that today? I'm just curious.
We really don't. Haven't talked about it since then. I don't know. Something maybe this holiday season might have to talk
That's
to
an
her.
Interesting question to ask her. But your faith began to grow then, and it's become very real to you, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, I see things unfold. I've got more patience, more peace. Even when things are still not perfect, you know.
Believe me, things aren't going to ever be perfect on this side of eternity.
That's true.
But one day.
They will be perfect. So, you know, and my wife and I discuss this stuff and all that, and, you know, we talk about prayer life and praying and all that. I said, you know, I see him answering prayers. She goes, well, I don't. I said, well, because sometimes we got to get out of that mentality. I said, it's not driving through the drive-through service and picking things off the menu, and then you pull up and you get your answer. No, it takes time. I said, go back and look at the Bible. I mean, the Bible is our history book. It's evidence of what, and that's what I refer back to. And I look up different things. And so it's been.
When we ask prayers, God says either, yes, we love it when he does that. He says, wait. And we don't like that as much, but we're willing to wait. And people then say, well, he also says no. I don't believe God says no to any prayer. I think God says, I've got a better plan.
I agree. And I keep telling my wife that, too. And that's the same thing I said. Well, why we haven't had it? It's not time yet. I said, in his time. Remember that. It's not our time. It's his time. So, you know, that's the exciting part. I mean, even this morning being up and doing some things and reading beforehand, it's just, I mean, talking about 55, I think it's verse 10 and 11. What he speaks, when he says, will not come back empty.
His word will not return void.
Yeah.
His word is always going to be accomplished.
So that's refreshing. You read that. So
you're talking early morning time with the Lord as being very important in your faith
development. Very important for me. That's what's quiet. Not a lot of people get up at 4:35 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, not many do, Joe.
And I don't need an alarm clock. He wakes me up. And so we go at it, then I do that for about an hour and a half, and then I go out and walk for about 4.5 miles, and I come back in.
Mm.
And I go to work.
And what are you doing now, working-wise?
Working-wise, I'm with a company here in Charlotte that does a multitude of things as far as with insurance product.
Okay.
They deal back with the automotive industry and service contracts and stuff like that. We also handle the health insurance, and I'm in charge of trying to help get the other insurance for those stores, for the workman's comp, and other issues like that.
So still active life today for Joe Jacoby.
I think it's more active in my faith in that walking than doing the business. I only do work about 5-6 hours a day.
Mm.
My wife goes, well, don't you have to go into work? Well, this day and age, I mean, my work's in my hands with that iPhone.
Mm. Joe Jacoby is my guest. We're talking about his life, his faith, and Joe, I know one question that's not faith-related, though it may be, that people would love for me to ask is, what's one thing Joe Gibbs taught you as a great coach who lives in this area and is still respected by so many people? When we come back, that'll be my first question.
Okay.
I'll ask Joe Jacoby. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. My guest, Joe Jacoby, former NFL great, Washington Redskin hog, 4 Super Bowl appearances, 3 champions. Just really great to have you on the show today, Joe. Thank you for your time. I teased this segment with this question because I bet a lot of people would love for me to ask you this. One great life lesson from your coach with the Redskins, Joe Gibbs. What's one thing he taught you that you remember?
Well, there's so many, but I guess the one that stands out as far as getting to this point with Joe as my coach now, all the other coaches had, scars or their lifestyle. It wasn't that walk. I finally had a man of God leading the other man, and his walk never wavered. All the other coaches I played under, and not to say they were bad or anything, it's just the mentality of coaches, and it's still to this day, is how they act on the field, how they use their language. None of that was with Joe. In the 12 years I was with him, not one cuss word ever came out of his mouth.
That was my college coach, Dean Smith, same thing. Never heard one cuss word come out of his mouth.
That influenced me.
Yeah,
I'm going,
me too.
Wow.
Me too.
And to see that what the stress and the pressures and the, what he's going through in everyday life, he never pushed his beliefs on anybody. But in every message and stuff he talked about that. In general terms with football-wise, but it related back to the Bible as I look back on all the conversations and stuff. And I hear from him every now and then. I remember after I retired, he called me. The first time I get a call from him, I answer the phone. I go, hello. He goes, what do you do on this play? It was called 50 Gut. I go, who is this? He goes, you don't remember? It was Joe. I mean, that's how he is. I mean, he calls. I mean, he's always thinking and moving and all that. He's been there for me. He's been there for my wife, mostly my wife who went through cancer, was it that, 12, 13 years ago. Joe offered everything. He goes, we couldn't get in to see this one doctor. Joe called. The doctor hung up on Joe. And Joe, his tenacity, he called right back and got on this guy. He didn't let him talk. He goes, this is what you're going to do. They're going to be in tomorrow at 10 o'clock. You're going to see them, and you're going to take care of them, okay? And that guy goes, okay.
So he was a coach for a few years, but a friend for life.
Right.
Wow. Joe, let's shift because we've only got a few minutes left in the show. I want to give you a chance, though, to talk about the importance of faith in your life. You know, you grew up with an understanding of faith being God is the punisher. You said off air that was just hilarious that your knuckles being swollen was less about the NFL but more about the nuns who
yes.
wrap you on your knuckles with a ruler. The truth being you have come to understand God as a father and a daddy who loves you deeply, and that's so important.
Well, it is important. It took me, gosh, I'm 60 years old now, over the last, I would say last 10 years, the faith has gotten deeper as you got deeper into his word and all that. And looking at that, I mean, Romans 8, 31 through 39, I mean, through all things, he's going to love us whatever happens. Doesn't
neither
matter.
Life nor death, yeah. nor angels or principalities, and, I mean, things present, things to come. Nothing can separate us from his love.
Our iPhones and stuff. I have all that saved. I saved different scriptures in there so I can refer back to them and to the moments of where I'm going through, and it's encouragement, and it gives me, because it wouldn't have been said if it wasn't true, if it had somebody else had gone through it. And that's what I've learned. Now, back when I was growing up in Catholicism and life and all that, my interpretation was, the God was an angry God, mean God. I think some people still have that. That's far from the truth. God's not out after you. He is after you. He wants you. He wants you to come back.
He pursues you in relationship.
Right. You're his son or daughter. He wants you back. He wants you in the family. And the only way to do that is by making that commitment that his son, his only son, came and saved us. And that's just being in the sports world, football, and the commitment and laying down your life for somebody. And, you know, we talk about the different things in sports metaphors and all that. And that happens on the football field, happens probably when you were playing. You'll do things that, I don't want to do this. I mean, this guy's going to get all the glory and all that. But the glory switches now. It goes back to God. Mm. You don't have to worry about that. God will give you your rewards when you get to heaven.
Mm. Joe Jacoby, if you had to give people one piece of advice in living their lives today, especially for people listening, Joe, who are experiencing adversity,
right.
Like you have, the loss of your dad when you were you know, young, the loss of your 14-year-old brother, the loss of your mom, your wife's had cancer, you've got heart issues, you've had to have a stent put in your heart because of some genetic conditions in your family history. You've continued to move forward with your faith. What advice would you give people listening, especially those going through adversity?
Gosh, I'm not very good at remembering different passages. I remember the passage, but I don't remember where they come from. I mean, and I guess the sports metaphor gets in. I guess it's Corinthians with the race and all that.
1 Corinthians 9. I'll help you out.
and that's what I refer back to because growing up in playing sports and all that, you know, my wife always and I go back and forth, and you know, she's always all this. And I said, you know, I always look at the glass half full. I said, the other reason you look at it is half empty. I said, there's more that go in that glass, and that's why I get up, and then there's why there's another day. There's something else. Who else is coming across? And, you know, there's so many things. And then I want to do more with camps. I'm working with guys, big guys. I want to do a big man's camp because you got all the 7-on-7s and for the guys who are the stars. But we did one last year, and it was a lot of fun. And these kids really appreciate it because somebody took the time and made them special for their doing the drills and stuff we do.
Well, and like we've talked already on the show, just the importance of not just fathers, and any of these guys come from fatherless homes or dads who aren't involved, but also the place a coach can have in a kid's life to help influence them to be what God wants them to be.
Well, the kids are looking for it. They want something more. They know something's out there, and they just need to be guided in the right direction. Somebody, the devil's going to be in there going after him too.
Yeah, the devil votes against you. God votes for you, and it's your choice which side you want to go to. Joe Jacoby, you've got 15 seconds and a microphone to the city. What would you like to tell our people listening today?
Well, just stay on that path. Trust in God. Just go back to Exodus 14:14. Just trust in God. He's got your back. He's not going to let you down. But you got to commit your life to be part of his life.
Yeah, and once you do, you'll find an extraordinary power operating in and through you that will take you where you're supposed to be. Yes. Joe Jacoby, NFL great, a great in the eyes of God, which is what's most important. Thank you for your time today. It's been great having you on the show. And folks, let me end as I always end. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might, and love your neighbor as yourself. If you'll just do those two things, you have a lifetime's worth of work to do. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. I look forward to talking with you all next week.